The rape is something that I don't actually give a lot of thought to. Mm-hmm. I don't, not consciously these days, but it still affects everything I seem to do and the way I think. So it's almost like an unconscious thing that I think has been assimilated into me and my personality. I think over the years I have reached several points where I think I've dealt with it. Okay. And I've almost like felt, yeah, I'm done now. I'm okay with it now. Right. And then a new experience happens or a new relationship or anything that can just throw up a whole load of new questions. And it always seems to relate back to it somehow. And I have to find a new... or I have to deal with it in a new way.
When was the last time that happened? When was the last time you thought you dealt with it and you went, oh?
Oh, like 2 or 3 weeks ago. There's a sound I sometimes hear, which is on Doctor Who or something similar. They can sometimes have, you know, one of the baddies, one of the villains will have a very gruff, nasty voice. If I hear that sort of thing, it reminds me of the rape, because this guy had a very rough, nasty voice and was very threatening and spoke to me just in my ear, because he'd bound my head up with masking tape. But he would speak right here, right into my ear. And so that will just, if I hear anything like that, it's just, again, it will just transport me back. It's still with me, even though I don't carry it with me. I don't feel I carry it. You know, it is part of me.
It would help me to understand more of what happened, if that's right with you.
Sure. I mean, basically, it was... where I, without going into massive amounts of history, I used to live... in the UK, in a very small, sleepy, rural town, where back in those days, we didn't really lock our doors. It was very community feeling sort of place. Everybody knew everybody. And it was a sort of late autumn evening in October. And my mum and I were sitting down on our sofa watching TV. I think I was doing some drawing at the time. I used to be really into art. And a guy literally just walked into our house.
Through
an open back door, and we heard a noise back in our kitchen. But my mum and I were sitting on the sofa, and at first we knew there was a noise, and we looked at each other and we said, "Are you going to look at what that is?" Or are you, you know, it was that kind of a silly argument. It was, you know, and before we could come to a decision, that our living room door had actually been shut, and he just burst the door open, just came banging in, and that was it. And he had a balaclava on and had a knife. And he immediately, you know, was telling us to lie down on the floor, screaming at us. And
what was your first thought? Did you think he was just burning
the house?
I thought
it was a joke. My first initial thought, and this is something that will always remain with me, that someone was playing a joke.
Because it was so ridiculous.
Yeah, these things don't happen.
Okay.
They don't happen to you. Everybody thinks, you know, nothing will happen to me. Or a lot of people think that. Mm. And again, that's a generalisation, but you never really do. So the first thing was that you're just in this dream, and obviously somebody's just going to go, ha ha, isn't it funny? You know? So that was the initial thing. And I think after a few seconds of that, and then you realise, no, it's not. I went into a kind of survival mode, whereas I was then telling my mum, repeating his instructions to her and shouting at her to tell her to do exactly what he said. My mum was kind of in panic mode and couldn't really move. So I was trying to push her on the floor and get her down on the floor too. Because my just thought was, if we do what he says, then there's a chance, you know, there's a chance we'll get away.
But what did you think he was there for at that
initially
stage?
Not really sure. I mean, seriously, I think the initial thing was the joke. Then it was like, well, a burglary.
Yeah.
You know, that it's almost like you go, for me, it was like I went up in sort of levels of seriousness of what he was there for. The sexual thing, in all honesty, hadn't really crossed my mind at that point.
Okay.
He did push us down on the floor, and he bound us up with masking tape, and he put a gag down my throat, a woolen gag, and then taped over it. And I was like that for about 45 minutes. And that was a very horrible time, but I was trying to breathe. And I found it very, very difficult to breathe. And I was sitting, he pushed me back onto the sofa to sit. That time during those 45 minutes, I was pretty much left alone, other than hearing things with my mum.
Because you couldn't see?
I couldn't see anything. I could just hear.
Because you were blind?
I was blindfolded completely with masking tape. And then down over my mouth as well. So I couldn't even hear very well. But I could hear shuffling. I could hear noises. I couldn't hear my mum's voice. I could hear his voice occasionally. Sometimes he would talk into my ear again, very, very closely.
What kind of things was he saying to you?
Well, initially, I mean, I tried it on, quite frankly. A couple of times I was like, right, what can I do to get out of this? So I tried to talk to him. He said, if you talk, I'll kill you. But I still tried. I was like, right. And I said to him, we have a friend who comes here. It was a Wednesday night. I said, we have a friend who comes here on a Wednesday night quite regularly.
Wow.
He might turn up. And which was true. There was a friend of my dad's after my dad died who used to come and visit us.
Okay.
And he just said, if he comes, I'll kill him. You know, straightforward. I did try and look at him before the masking tape went on, but he put a knife towards my eye, so I had to turn my head again very quickly. He also turned the radio on, which was a really weird thing. He turned the radio on, and at that time, that was kind of all like this dawning period for me of like what was actually happening.
Okay. Because you knew he was trying to do that for a reason.
Just because it was like, it was suddenly realizing that, yes, this is life, this is the real world, okay. This is happening. Because here, there is a radio program that's being broadcast live. There are people talking about the weather, and I'm sitting here. Maybe I'm going to die in a few minutes. And that was like the dawning of, this is really happening. I didn't realize at the time that my mum was being raped at that point. So he raped her in the living room. In all honesty, she was very quiet. So I didn't hear anything that was really particularly upsetting. It was only that after that time, he then came to me and started to unbutton my shirt. So at that point, that was like, okay, now I know. Mm. Now I know why you're here. Mm. Even at that point, it's going to sound crazy. Mm. I wasn't worried particularly about sex. I wasn't worried about losing my virginity.
So how old were you?
I was just turned 14.
Yeah.
I was literally, I just don't want anything to hurt.
Mm.
I didn't want pain.
Yeah.
And I didn't obviously want to die, but I was thinking, well, if I'm going to die, I don't want to be tortured. I don't want to know about it. I just want it to be quick, okay. You know? And literally those are my thoughts.
Hmm.
I think I'd kind of, I still was in survival mode, I suppose, but I think I was also in a sort of certain level of acceptance as well. There was not an awful lot I could do.
Hmm.
I think it was mainly like, if I can just not upset him.
So your brain was working really fast, wasn't it?
My brain worked overtime. I mean, yeah. I don't think I was in any way... I don't think I'd shut down.
No.
I think fear had shut down a sense of... Or at least, it's difficult to explain. I don't think a lot of people know what real fear is. I have a theory that people don't know. When people talk about fear, and I think, well, actually really don't know what fear is, how paralysing it can be.
Mm.
And
is that what you had? Would you classify what you had as real fear?
Yeah, I would.
And so what were the symptoms? What did you notice?
Well, I think initially a paralysis. You can't, I mean, people talk about fighting an attacker, for instance.
Yeah,
I have had people say to me, well, why couldn't you fight back?
Yeah.
I'd say when you're sitting on a sofa and there's a guy of nearly 6 foot standing above you with a knife at your face, you know, it's like, well, that wasn't an option.
No.
That wasn't an option, not for us.
No.
So
in a way, your survival instinct, which must have been kicking in, even if only subconsciously, didn't tell you the best way to survive is to fight this guy.
No, it didn't. Absolutely didn't. I think I kind of felt that whatever he was going to do to me, and this is particularly in relation to the sex thing, once I knew it was a sex thing, when he started to take off my clothes, I just said to myself, I can get through that. I can get through if he wants to, you know, whatever, if he's going to rape me. I can get through that. I just want to live. I don't want it to hurt. And then I will survive it. And that's how I felt.
Okay.
And I guess that's why I've not, I mean, obviously this is digressing slightly, but I think in the past, you know, since, I've not had problems necessarily about feeling dirty or feeling about fault, because it wasn't my fault.
Yeah.
And I was very much tried to separate myself that night. And that's my body. He can have that. He can do what he wants. Doesn't make it right.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'll get through it. I'll be all right, you know.
And so, and you can choose how much to say and how much not to say.
Yeah.
Of course you can. But was it pretty quick? Did he, I mean, what did he do? Did
he didn't, it wasn't quick, not with me.
Right.
It was fairly quick with my mum. I say fairly quick. I mean, I don't know fully out of those sort of 45 minutes I was on the sofa how long he was actually attacking her for.
Mm.
We haven't actually discussed it in real in-depth terms, you know. But after that point, he then took me upstairs and my mum, and he put my mum in my brother's bedroom and he put me in my bedroom.
Mm.
And then the rest of the evening, 2 hours, he spent with me. He had a Polaroid camera, so he took a lot of photos, arranged me into certain positions, you know, with things, a bottle, a knife. And obviously I don't know this because I couldn't see, but he obviously was in the shots himself and did things to me. Mm. Up until that point in life, I mean, my only experience was having a snog and a fumble. I wasn't really, you know, I'd never actually come into contact with a guy's genitals, and suddenly there they were. I was forced to, you know, give him a blowjob.
Without even really knowing what that was.
Yeah, probably. Exactly. Didn't really know what to do.
Can I ask you, what kind of a 14-year-old were you? Were you a, you know, because some 14-year-old girls are incredibly naive about sex.
Mm. I wasn't naive.
Okay, so how much did you know? I mean, did...
I knew an awful lot. I just hadn't done it. I was a very... I was ahead of my time for 14.
Okay.
I had an older sister who I idolised. I wanted to grow up far too quickly. I'd already had boyfriends, you know. I was already smoking cigarettes and drinking cider in the park, that sort of thing. Yeah, I was very much a bit of a rebel. You know, so I knew stuff. I wasn't sort of like, oh my God, what's this?
No.
Or what's happening?
But when he was, did he ask you to do things or did he just do them to you?
He just did them to me. And then obviously one of the worst things he did, because obviously the breathing problem was that he sat on my chest and put his penis in my mouth. And at that point was saying, suck harder, suck harder. And at that point, I could barely breathe.
Yeah.
So that was probably the most horrific memory. But yeah, he told me what to do. And there wasn't really a case of ever me struggling against it. You know, I didn't. I was just like, well, I'll be a sack of spuds and he can just do what he wants. And even with the photos, I just tried to very hard to separate myself from really what was going on. Mm. Even to the point where I did some very odd things as well. I've struggled with weight in my life, and I think even at 14, I was probably a little bit overweight. I remember when he was taking a photo of me, I was thinking, do I hold my tummy in? Or do I try and look unattractive? I know that sounds crazy, but I was literally like, and this was before he'd actually tried to rape me.
Right.
If he thinks I'm repulsive, will he then not rape me?
Mm.
This is how I felt.
So again, your brain was working.
I was thinking, what can I do to make this better?
Mm.
I also got him to call me Catherine, bizarrely.
Did you tell him that was...
I told him that was my name. And I don't even remember planning it. He literally asked me what my name was and I said Catherine. Just this voice came out saying Catherine.
And that's nobody's name in particular?
Nobody's name in particular. My only explanation for it is that maybe if I could just try and be someone else, then it wouldn't affect me in the same way.
Yeah.
And the only problem was that at the end, he then said to my mum, Catherine's still alive. He went into my brother's bedroom and said that. And my mum was like, she's not called Catherine. And of course, at that point, I thought, great, he's going to come and hurt me now. You know, but he didn't mention it. He didn't.
He spent 2 hours with you in your bedroom.
Roughly, yeah.
And then went back into your mum's room.
Well, at the end, I mean, basically that was when he did everything to me in the bedroom. That was sort of my time. And then at the end... The situation in terms of the attack was over with my mum downstairs.
Yeah.
Then it was me when we were upstairs. And then after that, he actually removed our masking tape and found some things like a school tie and a scarf and various things and tied us up again, but loosely. so that we would obviously be able to get away.
Right.
And at the end of the evening, that was when he left.
Who are you now in relation to what happened there? It's a big question. But do you know what I mean? How much... You said I don't carry it with me, but it's still with me.
Mm-hmm.
When you talk about it now to me...
Yeah.
How are you feeling now,
mm-hmm.
talking about something that happened a little while ago?
It shocked me now how upsetting I still find it to talk about.
Right.
That emotional response. I think because I'm very good at dealing with things in theory and being very logical about stuff, that I forget how, you know, I can have this emotional reaction and that I have no control over it.
But you say that, and I don't know, I can't be inside you and know how you're feeling, but you're talking incredibly eloquently. You're not... Tears aren't streaming down your face, that you might be close to tears.
They might be later. I might collapse in a heap later, in all honesty. Seriously, I'm fine now. I'm fine. What I mean is that it's like my tummy's tight.
Okay, okay.
My heart is beating.
Right.
It's that sort of reaction.
Hmm. But you're surprised by the intensity of that feeling.
Yeah, and how it still feels like yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
But in terms of who I am now... there's this phrase I learned once when I was doing this coaching course that, you know, don't become your story. And I sort of like that phrase because I know that I went through a stage of when I met people, for instance, I would almost tell them about the fact that I'd been raped before I even told them what my name was. It was very much like, this is my identity. I'm a survivor.
This is who I am.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. And then I actually was like, no, don't want to do that. And then I went through a stage of actually not, you know, and then I was like, no, a bit more private about it.
Mm.
I don't regret it. I know that sounds weird. I've never regretted the rape happening.
Really?
No.
Really?
Really. Really.
Because?
Because I like who I am and how I've dealt with it. I don't like what it's done to other people. This is where I might get upset. I don't like what it's done to my brother. Because he's not a real person anymore. He's very, very troubled. I didn't know I was going to cry, sorry.
It's okay.
But I didn't know, you know, I can't protect him and I can't make his decisions for him. He's chosen a path of being alone and not talking to anyone.
Okay.
He's the worst affected out of everyone.
Yeah, we haven't talked about him.
No. But it's not. I can't even talk about him because there's nothing to tell in that he doesn't talk to anyone anymore. He's just hidden away. He doesn't respond to anyone really.
Okay.
So that's like, that's a real scar. The only regret would be about him. My sister, you know, she's had her problems, but basically she's okay. My mum, not great, but you know, she's surviving. And me, I think I've actually done really well, and I like myself, and I like the fact I've survived it. I like the fact that I can. It's taught me that life can sometimes be really bloody horrible and really awful, but actually, you know, life is joyous and great and you should try and turn it around and have fun and, you know, I like that. So I don't actually really regret it, seriously. I've always said, you know, people go, why do these things happen? Why me? Why me? Well, I've always thought, why not me? I was obviously being tested and I feel that, you know, I was sort of tested for a reason. And I sort of feel I'm here for a reason, you know, maybe I'm hitting upon that reason now by writing and stuff. But I don't regret it.
No, I
really.
Can hear, I
you can,
really
you
hear,
know I mean
true.
It, don't you?
Yeah,
you know I mean
I do,
it.
I do. Thank you ever so much.
My pleasure.
It's been an amazing conversation.
Hasn't it?
I feel really taken in by you in an amazing way, actually. Do you want to stop now?
I'm fine with that, yeah.